The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Stephen Schork, he's editor of the Schork Report, head of the Schork Group. Steve, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
It's interesting to me as I read, you know, every morning looking on the terminal, Bloomberg Terminal, the stories for this natural gas and the crude oil market, that it has a lot to do with the way the market's trading. It seems that the whole question of Russia, Putin, is simmering on the back burner. How large does it loom right now?
It's a very large issue for the Europeans. Here in the United States, it has no impact because we are not, at this point, a very large exporter of natural gas, and we certainly have a tremendous ability to produce natural gas. Now, the situation here in the U.S. is the fact that we've had a record drawdown in supplies, and supplies happen to be very low. But the market, while it is up today, has been trending steadily lower since February. So the general consensus in the market is that, yes, supplies are very low, but production is such that we'll be able to overcome this deficit. I'm skeptical, but I have to respect what the market is doing, telling me what price-wise. With regard to Europe and Putin, yes, this is a significant problem because Russia supplies 30% of Europe's gas demand. 16% of that demand flows through pipelines through the Ukraine. Putin has demonstrated on numerous winters that he is ready, willing, and able to cut off that supply through the Ukraine and hold Europe hostage. Therefore, Europe has taken consideration of this over the past couple of years and has diversified its supply. But again, nearly one-third of it still comes from Russia. So the threat, of course, now is Putin cuts off the natural gas. It's spring. Doesn't matter right now, but the concern is next winter. And hence why we are not going to see any sort of decisive punitive action taken by the Europeans against Russia, because if we do, that is nearly a lock guarantee that Putin will play games with their supply of natural gas next year. Europeans cannot afford that, and therefore the issue of Putin annexation of the Crimea and potentially Ukraine in itself is still absolute—well, he did annex Crimea, and the fact that he could potentially move against Ukraine is very real because he knows the Europeans certainly cannot stand up to him with regard to energy, and the United States cannot stand up to Putin without the aid of the Europeans themselves. So it's essentially a win-win for Putin right now.
Stephen, you said you were skeptical, but the market was going its way and you couldn't ignore that. What makes you skeptical?
Well, it's this perception that we are sitting on this bottomless well of natural gas here in the United States. I'm skeptical from the standpoint that 10 years ago, all the best, all the brightest analysts out there, all the big economists were telling everybody in the world that North America was running out of natural gas. 10 years, we go from North America's running out of natural gas to North America's got enough gas for 50, 100, 200 years. Okay, great. But let's also now consider that we are killing the coal industry in this market. We are killing the nuclear market BTUs. Therefore, we are putting essentially all of our energy eggs into the natural gas basket. When you steer that much demand, and then you could be so egregiously wrong within 10 years about the overall supply situation, this Pollyannish view that the United States and North America are sitting on all this natural gas, you know what? We're creating a tremendous amount of demand. The economy is still lagging right now, and that is masking a lot of this latent demand for natural gas. But we are essentially setting ourselves up for 1 year, 2, 3 years down the road, a massive rally in natural gas, because you simply cannot divert all your demand to one commodity and not expect the price of that commodity to act accordingly. So yes, I am skeptical this year because it's this overwhelming, I think, euphoric thought in the market that we've got all this natural gas. And hey, we took out 2.9 TCF of gas this year, a massive amount. you know, we're going to have to try and put that in. I'm doubtful that we can. I'm enjoying the ride down in price, but I'm certainly expecting prices to turn around this summer.
Stephen, you just, you know, were making the argument that you're skeptical the U.S. is sitting on immense natural gas reserves. What makes you think that, you know, that they might all vaporize or disappear? Because we know what we're sitting on, don't we? Don't the companies know much better than in previous times, previous eras, what's actually down there underneath the ground?
Well, yes. To a certain extent, we have a better grasp on what is down there than we did, say, 10 years ago. But it's still an educated guess as to how much we can actually get out. And already we're starting to see, you know, very, very small telltales. For instance, with natural gas, with the new shale formations, the geological pressure is such that when you fracture and you break up those rocks, you get a tremendous surge in that gas or natural gas coming up through the well. Prolific, but as fast as it shoots up, it shoots down just as fast. So you get this big spike and you get this big, massive glut of natural gas, and then the output dwindles slowly. And this was partly responsible for the bear market beginning in 2009 when fracturing rocks really started to come to the fore, because we broke up a lot of rocks and we got a prolific amount of gas onto the market, which created a tremendous glut in 2010, 2011, and we've now worked through that glut, and more importantly, the industry has now matured, and its learning curve has now gotten to the point where it is now actively better able to manage the amount of gas it's bringing to the market, and hence why there is this tremendous amount of euphoria, shall we say, with regard to the summer, and really not a panic situation that we're not going to go into next winter with a very low amount of natural gas. So therefore, yes, the answer is we do have a better guess, an educated guess, but at the end of the day, it's still a guess. And we've been wrong. The industry has been wrong so many times in the past, that why should this time be the one time they get it absolutely right? Now, this market is going to rally. It is going to rally significantly. Is it going to happen this year? Is it going to happen 5 years? No one can tell you that. But just intuitively, as I said before, you simply cannot push all this demand and then expect wind, solar, to replace all of the coal and nuclear-fired steam generation that we are presently killing. So, therefore, demand will push prices higher. Yes.
Coal. You mentioned how coal is going away. In the last several months, I sat on a plane with a guy who is a chemical engineer and does a lot of consulting in the various aspects of the energy industry, lives in Arizona. And he made this point very forcefully that coal, just at a point when it's gotten so much cleaner, when liquefied coal, the technology is improved, the thrust in the country, certainly from a policy standpoint, is to make it, to get rid of anything that has to do with coal, bring in the solar power, even though a lot of the solar companies that are operating now, he says, are actually owned by foreign entities, employ some workers here, but actually you've lost a lot of jobs too, because it's a less labor-intensive industry, say, than coal. What do you make of that argument and what it means for the country? Is it good because coal's too dirty, or is it a mistake because coal today isn't the coal of the past?
Yes, I absolutely think it is an absolute mistake, because we are sitting on a tremendous wealth of shale oil and gas and so forth, but we are still and always have been the Saudi Arabia of coal. So we're sitting on a tremendous resource that we're simply not going to take advantage of, and therefore we're not going to get the investment to make it. Look, the coal that's being burned today with the technology and the emissions is much better than it was, say, 10 years ago. Is it still good? No, it's still horrible, but we're moving in the right direction, and we have an abundant resource that if you were allowed to get an investment on that resource, and the technology and the improvement would continue to get better. Similar to what we had with shale. Look, 10 years, we've always known about the Bakken. We've always known about the shale and about this resources, but it was never technically recoverable because the economics didn't dictate it. All of a sudden, we get natural gas prices that zoom from $6 a barrel oil equivalent to $100 a barrel oil equivalent inside of a year, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, the technology catches up, and now we get that supply to the market. It could also happen in coal. My biggest bugaboo with solar in wind is, heck, when do you need solar? When it's really, really cold out. You know what? Those photons trying to get through the clouds to take advantage and burn and create that steam are severely limited. The same with wind. When do you need wind? When I want to run my air conditioning. When is the wind not blowing? When I need to run my air conditioner. That's why it's so hot out. So when we talk about solar, when we talk about wind, all we're doing, all those are euphemisms for more natural gas, because you need to have a real dirty BTU, and natural gas still is a dirty BTU.
Stephen, I want to get one more question into you before we have to leave it. Barack Obama sitting down tomorrow with Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah. This as the relationships are changing when it comes to energy. We're, you know, getting more confident that we're going to be energy independent, that we'll need the likes of Saudi Arabia less. If the president were to call you this evening for a little bit of advice on how he should talk to the king, what would you tell him?
Well, absolutely. Now, with the message that the White House is sending right now is, conceivably within 5 years, the only country we'll have to import oil from is Canada. Now, we're playing games with that, with the pipeline and so forth, so there is that potential for energy independence. But let's be real here. That exists only for about 10 or 15 years, and then we begin to draw down the supplies that we do have, and then OPEC and the Saudis begin to reassert themselves. So the best thing any president could do is maintain that relationship with Saudi Arabia, because let's keep in mind that Saudi, the Arab Emirates, any oil-selling country is completely, entirely, virtually dependent on that income. We have to make sure they still have a viable economy, because if they go down the economic toilet, well, then what does that do for the regional instability in a region that is always unstable?
Okay.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.